There's a metaphor that happens only in winter that I think captures really well the full spectrum of what depression is in a fallen world. And the metaphor is, in the middle of winter, have you ever had a day, do you know the types of days, where in all the gray, long frozenness that stretches for months, you have a day where it's sunny outside? And have you ever noticed that there's nothing more cheerful than winter sunshine? What I mean by that is, you look around and the sun is shining down on the exact same landscape as it does when it's gray and cold and dingy outside. The trees still look like they're dead. The grass is still a tannish brown color. There's no green to it. There's no flowers. There's no life on the land. And yet, that sun shines down sort of untouched from above. And just brightens and cheers your heart. It cheers the landscape. I think that's a really good metaphor for depression and our experience of it in this life. There's a hope that shines forth in the context of a winter. And that hope doesn't change the fact that it's winter time. But it does completely reorient the way we understand and experience that winter. That's what we're going to be talking about today. Now, another introductory word before we sort of jump into the outline. Some of you have a hard time understanding the experience of depression. God has just equipped you with a type of personality where you're kind of naturally optimistic. You naturally kind of gravitate towards happiness, or at least not unhappiness, right? Settledness. That's a good thing. What a gift from God. That's a glorious thing that you should be thankful for. But if you're like that, it can be a temptation for you to see someone who's always depressed or talking about depression and think, come on, buddy, get over it. Buck up. Everything's going to be fine. You need to take action. Don't mope around. Don't be a wuss. Don't think about your feelings so much. And what I want to say to you, if you're there, is actually, that's partially true what you think, right? There is a sense in which we call people to buck up, right? We call people to take action against their depression. This is a true and a faithful thing to do. But there's also a sense in which you have to understand the experience of certain people are different than yours. And the experience of all of us, actually, is one where we can relate to depression. There's a sense in which all of us are touched by the things that express themselves in depression, and so we can understand. But we're not left without something to do about it, and that's the hope of the Word. That's the hope of the Gospel. Imagine with me for a moment, we're going to have an ongoing sort of case study, if you will, as we unpack depression. Imagine with me a woman named Mary who's a professional in her mid-30s. She has an incredible life. She's very smart. She's very successful at her work. People at work look to her to solve problems and to answer questions. She makes a lot of money. She's dating a guy who's wonderful and attentive, a guy whose life is marked by a seeking of the Lord. She comes from a great family. When she was in high school, she was that straight-A student. When she was in college, she was the girl that would be the president of the sorority, and everybody would go to her for advice. She has a great life. And so you're kind of surprised when she comes to you one Sunday, and she says, can we have a meeting this week? And you schedule the meeting, and she comes in and she says, last week, there were 2 days that I couldn't get out of bed because I was so depressed. I was so overwhelmed with feelings of hopelessness. And I'm frustrated with myself because I can't explain why. I haven't gone through a breakup. I haven't been fired. I didn't have anyone that I love died. I don't know why I'm depressed. But the thought of going to work, the thought of engaging in regular life terrifies me. I don't take joy in the things that I once took joy in. My boyfriend, my fiance is sweet and attentive. He's trying to understand, but I don't even know how to explain it to him. And so the only reason I came into you, she tells you, is because I just couldn't get out of bed and I know something's wrong now. And as she tells you this, she bursts into tears because she says, God has given me so many wonderful things in life, I know I shouldn't feel this way. What do you do with that? What do you do with that? I intentionally gave you a case study that's hard, because if it's attached to some grievous or difficult thing that happened, it's a little bit easier to make the bridge. But we need to step back and paint a picture of what depression is in order to solve the puzzle, if you will. So look down at your handouts. We're gonna return to Mary as we go along, but I wanna just offer a definition. You've heard other sessions on depression, I'm sure. There's lots of different definitions. This is just a stab at it. To be depressed is to experience feelings of despair in both body and soul that hinder your motivation and make you interpret life hopelessly. That's my attempt to capture the full spectrum of what our hearts do in being depressed. Okay? So a depressed person experiences feelings of despair, that's our affections, and hinder our motivation, that's sort of our volition, and make us interpret life or understand life hopelessly. That's our beliefs, that's our cognition, right? So it's sort of a full-orbed spectrum of who we are. So that's going to be our running definition, and I want to pack these in a couple main ideas, three to be exact, as you have them here. And the first one is knowing what God has told us about the world and about people. Christians are neither surprised nor threatened by depression. This first point might surprise you and depress you. This should not depress you. This should not depress you. The Bible, I love so much because it's so realistic in explaining our actual experiences in this fallen place. So let me show you where it does. Turn to Romans chapter 8. Turn to Romans chapter 8. How many of you are guilty of using Romans chapter 8, verse 28, as your primary text to a depressed person? Raise your hand. You're not guilty. Guys, Romans 8, 28 is a wonderful promise. It's a great one to use, right? You know what it is? For those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to His purposes, right? That's a beautiful, precious promise. We should never be embarrassed by that promise. But what I want to point out to you is Romans 8:28 occurs in the context of Romans 8 as a whole. And using Romans 8:28 without considering the context of the entire chapter to a depressed person can seem that you're not in any way understanding what they're experiencing. And therefore, the encouragement isn't going to land hard. It's not going to land in a way that helps them and causes change. So Romans 8:28, you got to understand the context, as I'm saying. So let's actually start up in verse 18. Because the context is suffering. The context is suffering. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy comparing with the glory that is to be revealed in us. For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of Him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to corruption and obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation has been groaning together in the pains of childbirth until now. Let's pause there. We're going to look beyond there. But for now, what I want to show you is this subpoint. God has told us that His world, once perfect in beauty, is corrupted by the curse of death. It amazes me how evangelicalism, sometimes as a movement, can completely overlook that. as if trusting Jesus means that your life is sweet and good in all aspects and at all points. And the more you trust Jesus, the sweeter and more joyful and more happy you will automatically be.